It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Republican presidential candidates face off at Milwaukee's Pfizer Forum next week for the first debate of the primary season. We turn to Wisconsin political scientists about what could transpire and how the Republican National Committee is organizing this event. Call in with a question, share a comment along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lily Gorin is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me on today, Kate.
Good morning. And Anthony Chergosky here as well, assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. Anthony, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Anthony, let's start with you. A fourth criminal indictment filed against former President Donald Trump this week. A prosecutor in Georgia indicting Trump and 18 others for attempting to overturn the 2020 election. How are Republican candidates responding to the indictments?
Largely rallying to Donald Trump's defense. And this is a familiar position for Republican candidates like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. They did not defend Donald Trump on the substance of the indictment. And again, that is a familiar position for them, not really engaging with the substance of the charges against Donald Trump, but rather going after the Department of Justice and trying to make the argument that the justice system has been weaponized against political opponents of the Biden administration. Now, this obviously puts Donald Trump's opponents for the Republican nomination in quite an awkward position. On the one hand, they are trying to persuade voters that they should be the nominee and not Donald Trump. Yet time and time again, they rally to the defense of Donald Trump. I think that is a big reason, frankly, Kate, why Donald Trump remains in such a dominant position within the GOP primary race, the race for the Republican nomination. So yet again, we see Republican presidential candidates largely coming to the defense of Donald Trump. Turns out it's deja vu all over again.
Lily, what is Trump's reaction
To the indictment?
Yes.
I mean, he obviously has put out any number of Truth Social messages with regard to the indictment itself. And he has been attacking Fannie Willis in Georgia and has made a number of ads, in fact, that are airing. But he's also said that he's going to hold a press conference on Monday in Bedminster, where he's going to produce a report that identifies all kinds of voter fraud that happened in the 2020 election to refute essentially the charges of voter fraud, among other things, in the indictment from Georgia.
Could some report that he reveals on Monday that he says exonerates himself, could that affect the debate in Milwaukee?
It might. It's unclear, again, if Trump will be in Milwaukee. I'm under the impression he's probably not coming. But it may, again, add something to the narrative that the other candidates will be discussing in terms of Trump either to some degree defending him, or others on the stage like Chris Christie, who, you know, will continue to attack him.
Talking with Wisconsin political scientists Lily Gorin and Anthony Chergosky as we look ahead at next week's debate in Milwaukee for candidates seeking the Republican presidential nomination. You can join in with your questions and your comments, 800-642-1234. Anthony, turning to the polls, and a new one out this morning from Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Nearly two-thirds of Republicans, 63% now, say they want the former president to run again. Trump leading polls. Do you expect any of the candidates to criticize the former president at the debate, or what do you make of the influence of the polls?
It's a very risky proposition for Republican candidates to go after Donald Trump, because after all, Kate, Donald Trump is so well liked within the Republican Party, even after all that we have been through on this political roller coaster over the last several years, even after all of the legal problems, Republican voters by and large really like Donald Trump and want to see him president, or at least wouldn't mind if he was president again. And so again, that means it makes it difficult for other candidates to try to carve out their own message, their own rationale for why they should be the Republican nominee instead of Trump. And it's been difficult for the other candidates to try to distinguish themselves from Donald Trump. They are constantly prompted to react to the latest situation involving Donald Trump. In fact, Kate, over the weekend at the Iowa State Fair, Donald Trump was overshadowing the field in a literal way because his plane was doing laps around the Iowa State Fair while the other candidates were on the ground doing the retail politics that can be so important in Iowa. So all told, Kate, there is no question that Donald Trump remains in a commanding position. I think the strategy among Ron DeSantis and others right now is to double down on those retail politics, to try to make the rounds in Iowa, so to speak, try to leverage those early states as a way to gain momentum. It's going to be easier said than done, because right now, Donald Trump is a clear front runner in this campaign.
I love that you bring up the Iowa State Fair, because it's like a rite of passage. I mean, an early nominating state, and that's where the Republican presidential hopefuls that they customarily have courted voters. Lily, as you look to the polls and how these candidates are going in this early campaign season, what impact might Trump have on how these debates go forward and how the other candidates are out there in Iowa and elsewhere?
Well, I mean, again, I think because Trump has this sizable lead, and now it, you know, again, there's nobody who's really close to him. DeSantis was closer to him earlier on, and now his lead advances have shrunk as well. So I think that all of the candidates are in a position where they have to distinguish themselves from Trump and to some degree explain why they should be the nominee instead of the person who many Republican voters would prefer to have. So that's a complicated argument to make, even in a retail situation where you're speaking one-on-one with voters. At the same time, you have a couple of the candidates like Chris Christie, to a lesser degree, Mike Pence, who have been critical of the former president. But again, it's hard to see how that motivates voters who like the former president to then side with somebody who is critical of Trump. And so again, it's a very complicated situation with regard to not only retail politics, but the sort of dynamic in general on the ground in terms of Iowa and New Hampshire, but also what we may see on the debate stage in Milwaukee and in other places in terms of how these candidates are trying to, I hate to use the word, contort themselves in order to make a case as to why they should be the nominee instead of Trump, without critiquing Trump.
On the debate stage in Milwaukee, Anthony, how is the Republican National Committee putting this together? How do candidates qualify to participate in the Milwaukee debate?
There are a couple pieces to the puzzle here. First, candidates must reach at least 1% in three polls that are considered qualifying polls by the Republican National Committee. They must also gather at least 40,000 financial contributors. And finally, Kate, they must sign a pledge that promises that they will support the eventual Republican nominee. Now, already, Donald Trump has said that he will not sign that so-called called Loyalty Pledge. And the rules have led to some interesting, let's just say, strategies for trying to make that debate stage. In fact, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum was giving out $20 gift cards if someone gave him a $1 donation, trying to get to that 40,000 donor mark. And indeed, Doug Burgum and others have been able to make the debate stage. A total of 8 candidates so far, we believe, have qualified for the debate. Of course, as we talked about, the big question is if Donald Trump will actually show up in Milwaukee next week.
What about that loyalty pledge? What do you make of the RNC doing that and getting these candidates to commit down the road?
It's quite important for a political party to unify behind a nominee. It's all about that pivot from the nomination process to the general election. And that can be an awkward pivot, going from trying to appeal to the party faithful and then switching gears, trying to appeal to the general electorate. Now, one way you can make that pivot, one piece of the puzzle to making that pivot, is to have the political party in lockstep behind the eventual nominee. I'm not sure how much this pledge itself matters. It certainly is not a legally binding pledge in any sense, but it does reflect the Republican Party's clear desire to present a unified front to Joe Biden. Sometimes that can be easier said than done.
As we discuss the Republican National Committee's first GOP presidential primary debate set for next week in Milwaukee, we have analysis from political scientists Anthony Chergosky at UW-La Crosse. Lily Gorin is here from Carroll University, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, add a comment along the way, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Republican National Convention is set for Milwaukee next summer. Pfizer Forum, also the site of next week's first Republican presidential primary debate. And we ask political scientists about what we should consider in this first debate. And you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, add comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anthony Chergosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. And Lily Gorin is political science and global studies professor at Carroll University. Lily, the New York Times is reporting that economic indicators all look good or great for President Joe Biden, but many voters don't give the president credit for the economy. What economic arguments do you expect Republican candidates to make against the president?
Well, I mean, I think that they will make a number of different kinds of economic arguments, some of them with regard to some of the debt that the government took on, particularly in regard to some of the post-COVID packages. And I expect to hear some of that in terms of deficit spending and sort of critiques of the Biden administration's approach with regard to taxes. Obviously, it's usually one that you hear Republicans attacking Democrats on. It's hard to sort of say, hey, the economy's great, so you're doing a bad job. But the distinctions that the Republicans will be trying to make have to do also with where some of the money is going. And to some degree, there may be attempts by some of the candidates to tie government spending to various sort of social and cultural issues.
Anthony, we've heard out on the campaign trail Bidenomics as a word, Biden trying to get across his agenda, economic agenda, and his achievements. What impacts do you see there?
I think it's a clear effort by Joe Biden's administration to try to change the narrative on the economy. Perceptions of the economy are so important. I think perception can really be reality when it comes to economic conditions. And these economic conditions really have been a drag on Joe Biden's approval ratings. His approval ratings sit somewhere in the low 40% range. That really opens the way for the 2024 presidential campaign. campaign to be quite competitive. And many Republicans, in addition to advancing an economic message, are advancing an electability message, basically going to the voters and saying, hey, we can beat Joe Biden and I'm the one to do it. So I'm very interested to see if we hear an economic message from these candidates and also if we can hear a case about why they are the ones to beat Joe Biden. After all, many Republicans have said that they will not support Donald Trump for that very reason. We've heard that from people like former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan saying, hey, I want to win this election. I don't think Donald Trump can win if he is the Republican nominee. And so I want to see someone else be the party's standard bearer.
Another customary theme, Lily, for candidates is public safety. The Council on Criminal Justice, they found the country is on track to have one of the largest ever drops in the homicide rate this year, but polls showing residents are worried about crime. What arguments are Republican candidates making about crime?
Again, I would probably echo part of what Anthony is saying in terms of the perception versus the reality here. And a lot of the attack often is that from the Republican side in terms of crime is that urban areas in particular are sort of racked with crime and are dangerous. And I assume that that is part of what we will hear with regard to questions about safety and security and crime. And that also ties back to the general GOP defense of Second Amendment rights and the sort of need for self-protection. And so I think those are usually connected to each other in terms of arguments around crime and also, who's committing the crimes, which has long been a talking point with regard to some GOP candidates and questions of who's committing the crimes.
We have Wisconsin political scientists Lily Warren and Anthony Chergosky as we look ahead to next week's debate in Milwaukee for candidates seeking the Republican presidential nomination. You can join in with your question and comments at 800-642-1234. Last year, Democratic Governor Tony Evers here and Attorney General Josh Caldley championed abortion rights in their reelection bids. And this year, Justice Janet Protasiewicz talked about abortion rights and flipping majority control of the state Supreme Court. Anthony, how are Republican candidates for president talking about abortion since the fall of Roe v. Wade and the U.S. Supreme Court overturning nationwide abortion rights?
It's such an interesting example of how the state-based way of presidential nominations makes a difference, because you hear very different messages sometimes from the candidates if they are campaigning in Iowa versus New Hampshire, the second state in the process. Some reporters noted that Ron DeSantis, as he campaigns in New Hampshire, really does not mention the restrictive abortion law in Florida that he signed. Meanwhile, candidates go to the more socially conservative Iowa, where there are more conservative Christians, more evangelical Christians, who play a major role in the Republican Party politics of the state. And the candidates are more eager to talk about abortion. And of course, we know that abortion politics are playing a very important role in the party. So I expect that you're going to hear something from Republicans on this issue. Right now, the big issue, Kate, in the party is if there should be national restrictions on abortion. Some candidates are certainly pushing in that direction. And I do think that is one of the rare areas where you actually see some policy contrast within the Republican field. By and large, the Republican candidates are singing the same tune. But on abortion, you do see some at least subtle differences among the candidates.
Lily, subtle differences among the candidates. How do you view abortion politics in the party and then on the debate stage?
Well, again, this is a really fascinating issue area because it's one that, each party has had a pretty clearly staked out position now for some time. And, candidates in the Republican Party have, had to be pro-life, and candidates in the Democratic Party have generally had to be pro-choice. And so what has happened since the Dobbs decision came down is we have seen a kind of scrambling in a number of ways in terms of outcomes when this issue is on the ballot, either directly as a protection in a particular state like Kansas or Michigan, putting into their constitution, or in the case of somebody like Janet Protasiewicz and other candidates who are sort of campaigning and saying, like, I'm going to be here protecting a woman's right to choose. And so that has really scrambled expectations in a certain way with regard to where voters are on abortion rights. Mm-hmm. And so I think what Anthony was saying in terms of, you know, what Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida versus what Ron DeSantis is talking about in New Hampshire versus what Ron DeSantis is talking about in Iowa is part of what we may see on the debate stage in terms of where the candidates sort of find themselves discussing abortion access or limitations.
Lily and Anthony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks. Well,
Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University. Anthony Chergosky, assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.